Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Green 19 podcast. It's been a little while, but we have the band back together. We have Tom Silverstein, Ryan Wood. I am Dominique Yates. This, for me personally, is an exciting time, not because of free agency, but because it's March Madness. For me, it's like the most wonderful time of the year. So I do brackets, all those fun things. Are you guys like March Madness guys, or you're just football, baseball, or whatever, and don't deal with it?
I've had a lifelong obsession with March Madness. So yeah, when I was little, you know, a kid, I tried to like channel my inner Joe Lunardi and predict all the teams and everything. And of course it was never accurate or even good, but I think, you know, when you talk about the greatest sporting events worldwide, the World Cup and the Olympics come to mind. The Super Bowl has got to be up there. You know, the Champions League over in Europe, and March Madness. I mean, I'd put it up there with anything. It's just an incredible event.
Yeah, I love it. Spoon, are you a March Madness guy? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think the competition is great, and you get to see games that you just have no idea who's going to win, and it so many come down to the buzzer. I'm going to the games at the Fiserv. I bought those tickets a long time ago. And so, you know, I don't know. It should be okay basketball the first weekend. You know, there's a couple teams worth watching there. I was surprised Wisconsin didn't get in there. That would have made it a little more interesting, just because I know the team. Yeah. But I'll get to know Kentucky and Iowa State. You know, they got some connections to Wisconsin. Their coach is from Wisconsin. They have some players from here. So it'll be okay, yeah. Yep. And I definitely watch games.
Yes. Wasn't it odd that Wisconsin was a 3 seed? There's 2 3 seeds playing in Milwaukee, and one of them's not Wisconsin. I thought that was very odd.
Very strange. Yeah. Apparently Kentucky edged them out by 1 something. I don't know what it was. Something in the, I don't really understand how they do all that stuff, but it's sort of like tiebreakers, you know, and wild card tiebreakers. I don't really understand the whole thing, but it was really weird. I thought for sure they were going to be there, and instead they're going to Denver.
That's true.
I should put a shameless plug real quick. Spoon, I'll also be there this weekend, getting pulled in to cover my first March Madness game, which is kind of crazy. I've actually won season back in 2012. When I was covering Auburn, which was a terrible basketball team back then. I had a top 25 AP vote. So I've had a top 25 AP vote, never covered a March Madness game. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what the Madness is about up close, live, and in person. It'll be fun.
That is funny. This is the first time in like 10 years I haven't been covering anything March Madness related, but it's been fun. I'm sitting on my couch. I'm watching the games, you know, maybe a sweet tea or two, just enjoying all the activity. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I might just come hang out with Spoon and watch some games, especially because, like, I know the Kentucky folks and, you know, maybe I'll see what that's like, but it's fun.
Yeah, I helped out here several years. One when Wisconsin was here and then they ended up going to the Final Four. But also some years where, like, I didn't really know the teams at all, but it was really fun. I had a great time doing it, you know. So you should have a good time. It should be fun and some interesting teams.
Yeah, I'll have to get some tips from you. Dominique, though, you've got to be looking forward to that. Just couch binging every game. I'll tell you, that's my annual tradition. It's going to be very different for me to be in an arena on first round, second round day. That's going to be a departure from what I always do. I'm always 4 games at once, completely hopping around channels and all that. You got to be looking forward to that.
Yes, I'm definitely a YouTube TV multi-view guy. Yeah. Four games going at once. Maybe have one on the laptop. Like I am locked in. So it was weird, especially when the conference tournaments rolled around and I see where the teams are at, and especially like Louisville and Kentucky, teams I used to cover. And I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm not there. I'm just watching. So it's been nice. No stress, no nothing like that. So I've just been, yeah, focused, locked in on a free agency for the Packers, which we can jump into because, as you know, it's been relatively quiet. But they signed two guys. They re-signed three. There's seven guys that have lost. They said that went on to different teams. And I guess we can kind of take that time to kind of just run in, just jump into some of that and just kind of touch base, because it seems like free agency, like I said, it's been relatively quiet. It seems like, as Spoon kind of alluded to in one of his columns, most of that heavy lifting might be done in the NFL draft coming up in April. So I just want to kind of bounce off that, and I'll go ahead and let Spoon start it off. Just as you look at the two guys signed, who they re-signed, who did they lost, what have been just your general overviews of what free agency has looked like this year in Green Bay?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, you know, from what we've seen, that they didn't think that highly of the free agent class, that they weren't going to overpay for certain positions. You know, they weren't going to overpay for a wide receiver. They didn't think there was anybody out there really that much who could help them as a pass rusher. And they sort of took a different route in improvement, you know, offensively. They didn't really address a big need, but they are, you know, they are definitely trying to build up their run game, and that's going to be a big focus for them, I think. And, you know, it's interesting because, so they signed Aaron Banks, left guard. They're going to move Elton Jenkins to center, and it gives them a pretty powerful run blocking offensive line at this point. I mean, it gets, on paper, it does anyway. It gives them a chance to be better in the run game. And of course that relates to Josh Jacobs, but you know, a kind of an unwritten part of this is that this is probably the best running back draft there's been in I don't know how many years, a decade maybe. And you know, you think they're packed with running backs, but I could see them taking another one. And this could be, you know, kind of a big shift in what they do offensively this season. So I think from that standpoint, that's how they addressed it. And then they, you know, cornerback is their is one of the most critical positions of any on the field. And they need depth in the worst way. I mean, I don't know where Hobbs is going to play or whether he'll start or what, but you got to keep building depth at that position. You, as they say, you can never have too many corners.
Ryan, for you, just, you know, what were your general thoughts as you have watched that things have started to unfold throughout these, I guess, first week or so of free agency?
I think first, the disclaimer, saying whether a free agent signee is a good signee right after free agency is the same as saying whether a draft pick is going to be a good draft pick right after free agency. We haven't seen these guys in the system. We haven't seen them in practice. We've not seen them on the field once. At that kind of base level, I think a professional GM, a Brian Gutekunst, who's got a good track record, deserves the benefit of any doubt that might come. So when it comes to Nate Hobbs and Aaron Banks, let's see how they come in. I mean, they clearly address two positions where they felt needed upgrades, especially when it comes to depth. The Aaron Banks signing certainly has a chance to upgrade the offensive line as a whole. Josh Jacobs is the heart and soul of your offense. He's the engine. Making him better is not a bad thing. On the flip side, you know that Brian Gutekunst loves versatility, and so you've got a guy in Nate Hobbs who they view having the length, the size, the ability to play on the perimeter, and also with the pedigree, the pass to playing in the slot. They've got Carrington Valentine on the perimeter. Might be some competition there. They've got Javon Bullard in the slot. He's a nickel corner going into next season. Can play some safety too, versatility, but that's where he's probably going to get most of the snaps. So you bring in a Nate Hobbs, you say, okay, you can play both. Let's see where you're best. Let's see where this battery of five DBs and nickel best fits with you in that system. So we'll have to see all that play out. But I think you can separate, okay, these are two sensical signings that they made with what I thought was paramount coming into this spring with a team that is young, very talented, very good, but not quite there yet in a conference with the NFC where there is no dominant quarterback. So what really happens is the teams that are built the best around the quarterback are going to be the teams that are going to be on the front line of competing for an NFC title, going to the Super Bowl. It's an arms race in this conference, and it was paramount, I thought, this spring to make a splash. It doesn't always work out that way, right? If there's not a splash at a position of need, then you're not going to spend big bucks. But if the impact value, the talent, lines up with a position of need, that is when you, as Brian Gutekunst said in his exit interview right after the season, show urgency and go for it. For the life of me, and Spoon, I have a feeling that there might be some disagreements, so by all means, push back. For the life of me, I don't understand why they weren't more interested, involved in DK Metcalf. That to me seemed like a perfect mirroring of value, talent, and need, because I watched the entire 2024 season. Wide receiver is a massive need. Yeah, you might fancy yourself a power run team now, but how well has that worked out for the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson going through that route in the postseason? I understand the Philadelphia Eagles just did it with Saquon Barkley, but if you look at the history of Super Bowl winners, throwing the football is still paramount. You have Jordan Love. You need to make him better too. You have a potential top 10 to 15 receiver in DK Metcalf, $30 million a year, which is what he got with the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's not an overpay. That's market price. The cap goes up straight north every year. In a couple of years, $30 million is going to potentially be under market. That's the market now for a guy that might be able, with the right quarterback, get you 1,200 yards, 8 to 10 touchdowns, clearly be your number one receiver. I was surprised that there wasn't more urgency shown there, but that doesn't take anything away from an Aaron Banks or a Nate Hobbs. Those are two sensical signings.
To bounce off that, Spoon, were there any surprises at all that the Packers didn't go after a DK Metcalf or a Cooper Kupp or a guy like that? Or do you think it almost made sense that maybe they're trying to get like a guy like Matthew Golden from Texas in the draft or an Isaiah Bond, you know, like a young, talented wide receiver?
Yeah, I don't have the same feeling about DK Metcalf. Like I've never been a big fan of him. I've felt like he's, you know, he is a superb athlete. In the right situation, he can be he can put up some big numbers. But I kind of, when people try to compare him to like AJ Brown, I think it's not even close. I think AJ Brown is so much better a route runner, so much better of a football player than DK Metcalf. And I totally, I would not have done that. I would not have paid that money for DK Metcalf nor given up the draft pick for him. I just am not a huge fan of his. I've seen, he can be handled. Sometimes he can't if you don't, you know, you don't cover him the right guy, you don't have the right guy. But if I was going to, you know, go all in on a receiver, it would be someone like AJ Brown. And I don't know that Metcalf in my mind is that guy. So I kind of understood why they didn't go that direction. I still thought they could have taken a shot on Davante Adams, but I understand why they didn't. You know, they don't invest in older guys. They just don't. That's not what they do. So even though I think he's going to do really well in the Rams offense. I think Sean McVay will find a way to use him. You know, now he already has a guy who will get the majority of the catches, Nacua. But he's going to be a great complimentary guy. Everybody else, you know, Cooper Kupp is close to washed up. You know, I don't know what that deal was. I don't think it was as good as it looked. And he was a great receiver in his prime, but I don't know if he can run anymore. Kind of reminds me of where Jordy Nelson was at the end of his career. It was like, do you want to get rid of him 1 year too early or 1 year too late? And I think the Rams probably did the right thing. So I didn't think that was a big one. You know, there's probably still some guys out there that might be able to help him in a little bit of a pinch. And there might be some guys after the draft who become available. But I think they can get someone in the draft that can help them. And I think they can get multiple guys. It's not going to be the same as having a veteran guy, that's for sure. But again, I think that's why we saw the investment on the offensive line. And they're gonna get back to, you know, it used to be said about the LaFleur and McVay and Shanahan offense that don't invest in wide receivers, just invest in tight ends and offensive line and running backs, because all the passing stuff's going to come off your running game and you don't have to have big time receivers. And it seems like LaFleur's kind of going back to that a little bit, like, all right, everything's going to go off the run game, and you know, they're not going to have absolutely explosive big time wide receivers. But that said, they do have to improve that position. Okay, that was a long-winded answer to all that.
Oh no, it's good.
That's all well and good. To me, I don't see this team going to a Super Bowl in 2025 if they don't significantly upgrade at two positions. Edge rusher first. That's absolutely one. And that may be 1A and 1B. Like that might be the top two. They significantly have to upgrade their pass rush, specifically on the edge and on the interior too. Like that's talked about less, but the interior can get better as well, especially with Kenny Clark not, you know, having a lot of mileage now, not having the season of 2024 that really inspires much confidence in his trajectory as he goes toward 30 with that mileage, but specifically edge rush has to significantly get upgraded going into the spring, and receiver, because receiver not only was not near good enough in 2024, it's a mess in 2025. Christian Watson, probably you expect almost nothing out of him the first half of the season, as Brian Gutekunst told you guys down in the combine. It's going to take some time for him to get on the field. Romeo Doubs, Brian Gutekunst said that he's not concerned about his concussion history, but I don't know how that's almost kind of like an oxymoron, like jumbo shrimp. Like if there's a concussion history, there's a concern about it. That's how the nature of concussions work. Yeah. I don't know how you can't be concerned about the concussion history with Romeo Doubs. Dontavian Wicks, hey, if you're looking for internal improvement, that's a great candidate, right? There should, if he catches the ball, we know he can get open, but that's kind of leaving it up in the air. Like that's not going out and asserting yourself and upgrading this roster. Just say, hey, maybe Dontavian Wicks won't drop the ball as much. Maybe he won't, but maybe he will. Jaden Reed, he's the one guy in the slot. That's a bona fide that he's shown star potential from time to time, but he also had inconsistencies last year, ended the season with the injury. He's an undersized guy. That's going to be more and more of a problem later into his career. To me, I understand Brian Gutekunst not being interested in Cooper Kupp. I even understand him not being interested in Davante Adams. Davante Adams, 32, 33 years old. Father time comes for everyone, and when he comes, it's usually quick. I think that we learned what kind of confirmed what we already knew, which is that Brian Gutekunst isn't all that interested in age, especially at positions where athleticism is a premium. That's why, to me, DK Metcalf would have made a lot of sense. He's young, 27, going into 28. He's runs a 4.3. He's 6.3. All he's ever done in his career is produced, never a sub 900 yard season. You put him now in a system that has a lot of depth around him, which means that defenses can't just key on DK Metcalf because, yeah, they do have Romeo Doubs who stays on the field. Dontavian Wicks can get open. Jaden Reed is Jaden Reed. And, oh, by the way, he's never played with Geno Smith. It's great. Russell Wilson, great. He's never played with a guy as talented of an arm as Jordan Love. A lot of issues from last season in accuracy, a lot of areas where Jordan Love can play the position better, but he's never played with a guy with that kind of arm talent. A 2 and a 5, $30 million for me, I would have made that deal.
Well, if he's – here's my question. And if you don't like the guy, then you shouldn't trade for him, even if you need wide receivers. And my question is, if he was that good, you know, I would have expected a lot more bidding for him than there was. I mean, you didn't hear a lot of teams. It was Pittsburgh, pretty much, is what I kept hearing all the time. And I never really heard about Green Bay being involved. I didn't hear about a lot of other teams being involved. And I think some of that is because there's some talent in the draft that can probably help right away. You know, they're starting to see wide receivers have more of an impact as rookies. They used to never have impacts as a rookie. And you're starting to see it. You have to get the right guy. It's not a guarantee. But if you can, it's a cheaper way to do it. I'm not sold on DK Metcalf, and I wouldn't do it if I'm Brian Gutekunst and I didn't think that he was the wide receiver that I wanted, then I wouldn't do it. And I think that was probably the case.
Yeah, I think clearly Brian Gutekunst didn't have that high of evaluation on DK Metcalf, but that's why he wasn't as involved. And time will tell, right? We'll find out eventually whether that was a huge mistake or huge, you know, dodge of a mistake. I don't know who else was involved, but I know that Seattle getting a 2, it's a premium pick. DK Metcalf getting $30 million, that's market price.
That's a huge investment.
Yeah, the Steelers thought enough of him to do that, and that's a well-run organization. So, and that's also an organization that needed receiver help. So, look, this is it's a great conversation, and it's nuanced. I mean, I understand. You know, DK Metcalf's got a history of maybe a bit of an attitude problem. Now, that wouldn't have bothered me, and I don't know that specifically would have bothered the Packers, a team that had a receiver last season just wake up on a Thursday morning, decide not to go to work, get suspended for a game, then he came back with open arms, had a good rest of the season. Like, they've been through that. I don't know if that would be it. I think it's more just Brian Gutekunst didn't see DK Metcalf as moving the needle to the point where it warranted that type of investment. Time will tell if he was right or not.
Yeah, so it is going to be very interesting. And I guess when you do look at the draft, I mean, there's a lot of depth at D-line. Like, there's a lot of D-tackles. There's a lot of edge rushers. But there are a lot of talented receivers as well. Like I said, Spoon and I talked to a few at the Combine. So there's a lot of speedy guys out there too, but so it'll be very, very interesting to see if they find a couple guys that could make an impact. But at the end of the day, the guys that are going to be on the roster, Wicks, Rick, they all have to get better. So that's going to be even more so I'm going to be watching than if they do have a rookie receiver, because you can't have 10 drops, 12 drops, 11 drops. You just can't have those many drops. It doesn't matter how talented any other receiver is. So I'm very curious to see how just that all will play out. So I do want to move on and look at, I guess, some of the guys that were lost. And just for those listening, you can obviously go to Journal Sentinel or PackersNews.com. There's free agency tickers. There's all kinds of content and information. So for any of these guys that you're curious about, there's a list of those. But from A.J. Dillon to Corey Ballantyne, they've also moved on. But as far as the four guys that you can say played meaningful snaps in 2024, from Josh Myers heading to the Jets, T.J. Slayton to the Bengals, Eric Stokes to the Raiders, and Eric Wilson heading to the Minnesota Vikings. Out of all of these guys, I guess you would say they're all replaceable, right? But was there any guy, I'll start with you, Spoon, was there any guy on that list that you were kind of like, oh, surprised that you maybe thought they might have been in Green Bay? Was there anyone at all or that you saw?
No, I pretty much thought all those guys would be gone. I really did. I mean, you know, maybe Eric Wilson, but the more I thought about it, you know, they've got Hopper coming up, and, you know, I think they want to play him next year. They want to find a place, and they already got, you know, they re-signed McDuffie, and he can make up for some of the special team stuff if he's not playing it. So, no, I didn't really think. I thought they would lose TJ Slayton. It wound up being not that much. Wouldn't have cost them that much to re-sign him. But like you said, this is one of the best defensive line classes in a long time, and it's deep. I mean, you can possibly get a starter into the third round. And I think anytime you can add youth, you know, and especially at a position where a guy mostly just plays on first down, if you can get a better all-around player, then you might as well go for it. So, no, I wasn't surprised by any of them, really.
That makes sense. The one and only guy I was curious about, too, was TJ Slayton, just because of how he came on strong the second half of the season. He was one of the best run defensive guys they had on that line. But, like I said, they're looking for pressure on the quarterback. So that was the one reason why I'm like, okay, I understand why they didn't. But for you, Ryan, was there any guy on that list that maybe there was any slight surprise that the Packers moved on?
Well, I'm going to have to eat it here, okay? And Josh Myers, I gave him a B-. Now, he was on the fringe C-plus B-minus range for me in my postseason grades. I ultimately, after a lot of consideration, gave him a B-, just having the intangibles break the tie. I thought when you looked at his season last year, he gave up a lot of bad runs too. It was a mixed bag, but it was his best season from what I've evaluated. And I've evaluated every single one of them on film in terms of not getting blown off the snap near as much, being much better with his leverage, which is always going to be – it wasn't like it was good in 2024. That's always – for a 6'5 center who isn't the strongest, that's always going to be a big challenge in his game, is getting under pads against defensive tackles. But when you look at what he got from the New York Jets, what was it, like 1 year, $3.5 million? I was way off. I could not have been more. 1 year, $3.5 million suggests a player who's not even average. That suggests a player who is needing to earn a spot in the league. I was shocked at how low his market was. So I eat that. My B-, Josh Myers, might have been the worst grade that I've been doing this several years, might have been the worst grade I've ever doled out. It was way too high. And mea culpa there. Not surprised that he wasn't back. In the end, it's clear that the Packers had no intention of bringing him back. They bring Aaron Banks, and it would have cost next to nothing to keep Josh Myers. They were ready to move on, understandably. What surprised me, and this is, you know, being between free agency and the NFL draft, we are at the midway point. We don't know how the puzzle is going to be completed. To Spoon's point, the draft being very strong defensive line, that's going to have something to do with it. TJ Slayton wasn't one of their best run defenders. He was the best run defender that they had on the defensive line. It wasn't close. I think I saw somewhere that PFF had his run defense grade low. I don't understand how that could be if you watch the film, because what surprised me about TJ Slayton, the big question for him going into 2024 was whether or not he could transition to the 4-3. And he's a guy that he's not flashy. He doesn't rush the passer. So it's, you got to really turn on the film, really get into the nitty gritty to see what he does, because he's not constantly harassing the quarterback. But you do that, and he was the same guy in the 4-3 as he was in the 3-4. His ability to control and to bully interior offensive linemen was just as good in the 4-3 as the 3-4. He was their best run defender. He was the centerpiece of a run defense that finished top 8 in the NFL. So I think you certainly lose something not bringing him back. The question is whether or not the draft that is loaded at that position can then more than compensate for what they lost in TJ Slayton. I think the Packers are banking on that happen for, and even though it was, what, 2 year, $15 million with that TJ Slayton got with the Bengals, a lower price tag than even that. So we'll see how the puzzle's completed. But as it stands at the midway point, that is a significant departure. Not TJ Slayton losing that centerpiece of your run defense on the defensive line, not having him, even if he was just a part-time player, 450 snaps, played run downs, early downs. They're losing something there.
Yeah. So I want to go back to the offensive line because I just wasn't really sure how they were going to attack it, because obviously, Ryan, too, we talked about this and you wrote, like, there was a lot of continuity on that offensive line, but you can't guarantee they're going to play more than 1,000 snaps together like they did in 2024. But for you, Spoon, I can't remember, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if it was you or Pete, when you talked about Elgton Jenkins at center has more of a higher ceiling than Josh Myers. Was that you that said that, or just, you know, what do you make of Jenkins? It might have been Pete, but what do you make just at him at that center position? Because wasn't that like when he was drafted, that was kind of a position they looked at for him?
Well, Elgton Jenkins is going to be good wherever he is. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not the player he was when he first came out. I mean, he's had some wear and tear on his body, and, you know, he has to take care of his knee every week. He gets a day off. Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, maybe doesn't bend the way he once did. He's still a really good player, and he's going to give them the ability to handle, you know, when they have to face a Jalen Carter, you know, he's going to give them some snaps where he can handle a guy one-on-one, you know, where they don't have to double a guy every single time. He's going to be able to pass block a lot better. He'll be a way better pass blocker than Josh Myers was in the middle. And he'll give them some sort of a protection of guys coming up straight up the middle. So I think from that standpoint, yes, he'll be an upgrade. I think, you know, Banks gives them just the size that they didn't really have. And need, you know, when they're playing teams like Philadelphia, you know, and they need some guys who can move people up front. And, you know, it really, Myers was more of a movement guy. Elgton Jenkins can be both. Sean Ryan can move people. But, you know, eventually, I'm not sure how this offensive line will shake out, like even a year from now, but they've set themselves up to have Banks and Elgton Jenkins, and I'm sure Zach Tom will be there. They'll find a way to sign him. And then, you know, the rest of the guys will just have to play themselves out, whether Jordan Morgan winds up at left tackle, I don't know. I could see eventually Zach Tom going to left tackle. I think that's a possibility down the line. You know, Rasheed Walker's really inconsistent, and I could see them moving him. Maybe Morgan goes there. I'm not sure, but they've got some flexibility now, especially with Elgton Jenkins, with what he can do at several different positions. So anyway, I think they've at least given themselves some options up front, and they've added size and a guy who can move a little bit too, and they've strengthened, you know, their offensive line. Myers, you know, I think we got the Packers did a really good job of selling Myers. They kept trying to tell everybody that he's having his best year, you know, that he was much improved, and I think they were trying to build him up. You know, every once in a while you'd hear the real thing, which, you know, like a Butkus say, well, he, you know, he needs to improve his consistency, but he's having the best year he's ever had, you know? And so I think they were playing a lot with his head and trying to get him, you know, build him up, get his confidence up. But the truth is, you know, he just was too inconsistent. It wasn't that he couldn't play. He had plenty of really nice plays on his tape, and then he'd have just a disaster play, and you can't have that in the middle. You know, you got to be more consistent, and I think that's where, you know, ultimately people saw Josh Myers, and it was easy to get lost in the whole thing. You know, guy's having his best year, guy's really helping, Jordan Love loves him, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, ultimately you have to the Packers ultimately were honest with themselves and moved on. So
yeah,
I think that's kind of where they're at.
Yeah. And I think it is clear too, Josh Jacobs probably masked some of the holes that might've been in that offensive line because of the season he had. Sure. But because I remember I watched many games, I'm like, this guy's getting met at the line of scrimmage or beyond, but he turns it into a 3 or 4 yard gain. So now that they've kind of adjusted the O-line with the scheme that they want to run, it'll, I mean, they're already top five, but we'll see if there's any more growth with that. As far as the guys, we can start to wrap it up here with some of the re-signings with Zane Anderson. Obviously, you're putting back that depth at safety. Isaiah McDuffie, I mean, the coaches love him, so he's back at linebacker. But obviously, too, and the biggest one, Brandon McManus, the kicker, is going back to Green Bay. For you, Ryan, just, you know, takeaways on the guys re-signed, but obviously the biggest one of the group was McManus. They were able to get him back.
Yeah, and that's not even, you know, it's not even worth the cheap joke of, oh, it's just a kicker, because the Packers know it's pretty important even if it's just a kicker. Ryan Gutekunst did not want to go back to the dark ages post Mason Crosby, where he's trying to fill a position that is completely exposed, completely vulnerable if it's not the right guy, and can has cost them games, cost them playoff games by messing around at that position. They had to re-sign Brandon McManus, who only missed 2 kicks last year, one in the playoffs, 38-yarder, which was kind of an anomaly because the only other one that he missed was a 46-yarder in the driving rainstorm against Detroit Week 9. So he was consistent. He made big kicks, 3 50-plus yarders inside Lambeau Field following Thanksgiving, including the 55-yarder against the Bears that should have been a game winner, had 2 game winners in his first 2. I gave him an A- my postseason grades, and he earned it. He did basically everything that you could possibly want, short of being perfect from the kicking position, coming in midway through October after a year and a half of just utter misery at that position. And for everybody, it's nauseating to see how many you try to guy out there, has no confidence in himself. You don't know if the ball is going to go through the uprights or not. And over again, on minus, you know, inside 50-yard kicks, not splitting the uprights, they couldn't go back to that. So, yeah, it was an important signing for them.
Yeah, that is one vet that you definitely needed on the roster. And it was funny because when I first got here, you know, I was talking to all the rookies and I was asking them certain questions. Then after McManus is second game winner, I was asking him a question like, what were your feelings going into it? He's like, man, I've been doing this so long. I'm like, yeah, he's a vet, right? Like, I had to kind of change that approach. But you needed a guy like that. And I think he helped Matt Orzech. He helped Daniel Whelan. Like, he helped that special teams unit all around him, bringing just that leadership and just that comfortable, calming voice. So it was definitely big for that group. Tom, for you, just, you know, thoughts on the guys that came back, McManus, et cetera. Just, you know, what were your takeaways?
Yeah, I think McManus and the Packers were a good match for each other. Mm-hmm. You know, they made him basically a top 10 paid kicker. And for his age, that, you know, that says something. I think it was probably good for him. If he goes to a new place, he's got to go over all the stuff about his past all over again, you know, and live through that and go through those questions. And I just think it was a really good match for both sides, and they come to understand each other. And so, you know, good solid signing, and they got it done before he even hit free agency. So, you know, that was good. McDuffie, I was a little bit surprised. I mean, it's not like they gave a ton of money to him or anything like that, but I did wonder whether, you know, they were just ready for Hopper to maybe get some more time and get in there. Although he's a little bit different linebacker than McDuffie. And it never hurts to have a really good special teams guy, especially if you're going to lose one like
Eric Wilson.
Yeah. You know, the one thing, and we haven't talked about it at all, is, you know, Jair Alexander is still there waiting to be either traded or cut. Yeah. And I don't get the sense that they've changed their mind on it. The sense I get is that they're holding out to see if they can get something for him. That, you know, at some point, some team's going to say, we didn't get the corner we wanted, we'll trade for him. And I don't know if Brian Gutekunst is kidding himself or what, but he's playing the market. God, he could, you know, it's strange, but he could wait until after the draft, even if some team doesn't get him. But it sets up a really bizarre situation, which is Jair Alexander comes to work on, you know, they start their offseason program on April 15th or something like that. And you're going to bring him in and have him start offseason workout, and he doesn't even know if he's going to be there. You know, what do you tell him to stay away? You can't. You know, he has the right to work if he's under contract. So they, you know, I don't know how much longer they're going to wait on it. But I, obviously they're trying to get something for him. I, as I said, I don't get the sense that they're going to change their mind, but they could. Who knows? Maybe as time goes on, you know, they decide we'll keep him, but they have to trade him. They got to find someone who's willing to take on his $18 million or whatever it is, $17 million salary. And if they want to restructure him, he's got to agree to it. So that's another aspect of the whole thing. You know, it kind of hurts him that free agency's gone through pretty much the top guys. I don't know what the market is like for corners, but anyway, it's an interesting, we're just sitting here wondering what's going to happen with Jair Alexander. And there's, in the meantime, still in need of cornerbacks.
Yeah. Ryan, I'll ask you just as far as with Jair, I don't know, at this point, I guess if he did come back, I just feel like it would become very awkward for the rest of the group when you have Keyshawn Nixon saying, I'm going to be cornerback number one. Nate Hobbs is coming in, you know, talking about, yeah, I'm ready to play. I'm ready to do this. Carrington Valentine is like, well, I'm getting better. The more I play, you know, I want to be on the field. They're going to add depth. I just feel like if he came back at this point, it might become awkward. Agree, disagree. What are your feelings?
I don't think that they would have signed Nate Hobbs to 4 years, $48 million if they were expecting Jair Alexander to come back. Now, you know, like Spoon said, you never know. Maybe they changed their mind. If they do, they've got depth for when Jair Alexander gets injured and is not on the field. So that's something they didn't have as much of the past couple of years. I think we'll find out by the start of the offseason program. I have a really hard time, as Spoon just laid out, I have a really hard time seeing them have him come to the join the offseason program if they don't intend on him being part of the team. That is just not a good situation to be in. It would be very easy. And I don't see Jair Alexander wanting to come for the offseason program if he knows that he's being shopped and that he's not in the future plans. It'd be very easy to say, we're working on something. This is, you know, keep him informed, keep him in the loop. This is the situation. Or maybe they release him by then. But I don't see the future pieces working out so that Jair Alexander's part of the secondary.
As we wrap it up, guys, I'll start with you, Spoon, then Ryan. Any final words, final thoughts, anything you need to get off your chest with Packers related or not? Is there any closing words as we wrap up the show?
Well, I don't think the Packers are done in free agency. I still think there will be something that transpires. I don't know that it'll be a big signing. I don't envision them making a big trade or anything like that, but you never know that. I think most of that stuff happens right before the draft. You're going to trade a player. And so we'll see how that goes. But, you know, they may sign some role player eventually, a special teams guy. There's still a few guys out there that aren't bad players. Whether they're willing to spend, I don't know. But I would guess that we might see one more guy signed before the draft.
That makes sense. Ryan, anything?
Yeah, like I said, if they had two mandates this spring to significantly upgrade the pass rush and receiver, and they haven't done either yet. And as it sets up now, it really looks like they are leaving an awful lot of that to happen in the draft, which, as this team knows, is a crapshoot. It's not like Brian Gutekunst is drafted poorly. He's gotten some guys. But it's not like Brian Gutekunst is drafted at a championship level either. He hasn't. So knowing that, knowing it's a crapshoot, knowing it's hit and miss, and that's what the track record's been here, you're going now into the draft needing to significantly improve two of those major positions, edge rusher, off the receiver, but let's not interior defensive line too, where the draft lines up well for them. That's an awful lot of work to get done in one draft. That's where my surprises come from. I thought they needed to use free agency better to make the draft, the workload, the heavy lifting in the draft lighter. I don't think they did that. So we'll see how the draft goes. You never know. Maybe they smash it out of the park first through seven rounds. They are able to accomplish what they need to do with this roster, but I think that they left an awful lot, maybe even too much to do in one draft.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because as of now, what do they have? 8 draft picks and a comp pick, or is 8 and a comp pick? Is that right? They have one. Nope. Like at the end.
They have 8 total.
8 total, yeah. Plus that. Okay, so said it as of now. So we'll see what kind of happens and transpires, especially when the draft rolls around. But other than that, we'll wait and see what just comes of these Packers and who comes in. Guys, as always, good catching up with you and enjoy March Madness. Get those brackets filled out and we'll have some fun with that as well. So it's always a pleasure, my friends. All right. Thank you all. Thank you all for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Tom Silverstein, Ryan Wood, I'm Dominique Gates.